Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah, we're so and good evening. Welcome to another edition of New Africa, Black Belt Wall Street Business Association, Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Bilal Masadiq Bynum, speaking to you live in my studio here in Washington, D.C. We're going to continue our broadcast. Statistics on African American families and the breakups that are going on with African Americans' marriages. And why the percentages of marriages are so low. This is our third week of this broadcast, but it's been such a stimulating broadcast. And, of course, it's a broadcast that must be heard because as far as my opinion is concerned, economics much to do with that breakup. I'd like to now, before I go into my opening, introduce my
Abdul Aziz Shaheed. Greetings, and assalamualaikum, brother.
How are you this evening, my brother?
Doing well, brother. How are you, my brother?
Thanks, good. And like I was just saying to our audience as they come on, we're going to continue our discussions on the shortness of marriages between African American males and females. And so that's going to be an open mic discussion, which means whoever has an opinion on this subject can feel free to work with us and share their opinion. There's no reason for me to leave what I left off saying last week. And that is, in my opinion, that the reasons for many marriages not being performed has much to do with economics. I believe my professor. Told me years ago when I was about to graduate, he told me, he said, Bynum, just wanted to quote some wisdom to you, and that's that you have your degree, it's important that you always try to make a pretty good income because you're going out into the real world. Remember, when poverty comes through the front door, love has a tendency to walk out the back. And so I can, I think that is a very, very true statement that I don't see a man maintaining a wife if his economics is not that as to where he can afford a wife. I think until a man can afford a wife, he simply shouldn't get married and should try to avoid having a family at all until he can see that he's in a position as to where he can afford his wife, because that's where it starts. And but like I said, if you get married, and every man definitely wants to be married, I mean, I can't imagine having to really live what they call a bachelor's life. I don't see where that's a very good life at all, although I was up in the age myself before I got married, but the realization of what I missed out on, I should have gotten married much younger because I could afford a wife after Dr. Barrickman, my professor in college, reminded me that once poverty comes through the front door, love has a tendency to go out the back. I tried to see to it that poverty stayed as full out of my life as I possibly could make it. And yes, a man should be make certain he's in a position to that where he can afford, or he can afford to get married. He can afford to have a wife, because it's a man's responsibility and obligation, in my opinion again. But I think it's the man's responsibility and his obligation to take care of his wife, being able to make certain that she has a secured place to live and a safe place to live, and all the provisions that she would need, especially, of course, the essential provisions, but some of the other necessities that she would need, he should be able to afford to give his wife the necessary items, I put it that way. And until you can, then I think you should defer from marriage. But as soon as you see that you can, then yes, go out and find it, because a beautiful bride, and marry her. But because, as you can see, situations where African-American males are marrying the females, and they're marrying for many other reasons other than starting out with economics. Economics have to be the number one, because, again, I can't take care of my obligations as a man without economics, especially here in the United States, where we live in a capitalist society. So economics have to be considered when one is talking about marriages. And when you're talking about marriages, the two, the male and the female, both should put together an economical portfolio of what their mode of living would entail. And once you put together that economical portfolio, now, of course, you two can start talking about marriages, because that economical portfolio that has been put together, the male can afford mode of living that portfolio, that economical portfolio, has been put together. Now, of course, if the lady he's about to marry or proposing to marry, she is going to be employed, then that is a gain, that is a great big plus for the male. It helps him out tremendously. But remember, it's help to the male. It's still his obligation, because at some point, mama, the wife, could start bearing a birth to her kids. And of course, she cannot work and give birth kids and raise kids, especially with the cost of raising kids nowadays. It's much better to have the wife at home, at least until the kids are at an age where they can show some independence. The responsibilities and economics, that's why it plays such a major role. Because the male and the female is putting together an economical picture that sustains them at this moment and will grow as their portfolio will grow along with different their mode of living. That will also grow. But I think a sound economical praxis and a pretty sound economical family, I don't think you would see the divorces in our communities as you see and have been seeing for many, many years. I grew up as to where my mother raised me, and my father wasn't around. And all of the hard times was put on the mother. And when it comes to the family living in poverty, there are so many things the mother herself is deprived of. Then, of course, it trickles down to the rest of the family, especially the kids. They're deprived of. And young folks can become very confused, especially when you're depriving them of some of the essentials that they feel like they need. I mean, young folks in high school and you know, they have all kinds of activities that come up when they're in school, and some of these activities cost money in order for you to be a participant. You may want to be in the band, and the band uniforms may cost this, or the instruments may have to rent them. There are many, many activities that your kids may want to participate in, and of course they can't because of affordability. And just how long do you think you're going to be able to take a child and try to bring the child up in poverty, and you're not going to have problems? So again, mom, that single mother who dad and left, he left because, again, in my opinion, economics, he didn't have a job, he couldn't get a job. Mom has already told him he was no good for nothing, and all of the other arguments that poverty is going to bring on. So, brothers and sisters, this is why when it comes to being independent, and in order to be independent, you must have some sort of business. You must be able to use your talent that all of us have to bring on something of economical value that you can achieve from your talents. And so whatever those talents are, it's got to have some value as to where somebody will buy or trade for it. And salaries, when you depend on a salary, salaries is good for, you know, this is like an insurance. It's a job I can get. It's a job that can sustain me and my family. But when you say sustain me and my family, how long can that be? I could lose the job, a bad health. And then not only that, the job just don't pay enough money for me to maintain the mode of living that I would like to maintain. I mean, when you start talking about that financial portfolio, ain't no sense in me putting together a portfolio. I'm broke. As soon as I get mine, it's gone. Poverty. It's just not a good situation to be in. And as African Americans, we must look towards business, because again, in our communities, business have to be in huge demand. Why? Because we are 97% consumers. And as consumers, we consume in 2023, statistics says we consume $1.9 trillion. $1.9 trillion that we spent in consumer spendings. And I can tell you, a large portion of that $1.9 trillion, hundreds of billions, was spent in hair. When it comes to the cosmetics, the hair was at the top of the list. So again, if we're spending that much money, and these products, why aren't we the ones who are selling these products to our communities? I mean, who's better at being a hairdresser, a beautician, or someone to make you come out looking real beautiful than the African-American sisters? Then why in the world, if we're this good at making ourselves, because we're spending, our sisters are spending the money, then why aren't we keeping the business in the community? If you can have Orientals come in here from another country, they just came here around 1970 or so, and now they're some of the richest folks in this country. And they came here, why? To do your nails, to do your hair, to do whatever you need to be done. You're sitting in that chair having it done, your toes and whatever. Fine, I mean, that's beautiful. But why aren't we in the business of doing that? We're the ones who's spending the money. Again, we got to start thinking about being independent, and your independence come from business. like I said, in our community, just about any type of business is in demand because we don't have any, very few businesses are in our communities. So this is why, and when it comes to the cash flow, I just told you about the $1.9 trillion in consumer spendings, but I didn't tell you about another $1 trillion that we put into our church spendings. I didn't tell you about another $1 trillion that we put into a federal taxation and state taxation and what have you. So again, that's just, and we ain't talking about what we put into our mortgages and car. I mean, it just goes on when the African American come into contact with a lot of money. And we've been coming into contact one or the other with this large pool of money for hundreds of years. But all of this money has always been for the benefit of Caucasians or those who say they're white, especially when it comes to banking. We put our monies into these white banks, trillions of dollars, and these white banks use that same monies to sell back to the communities. And when they sell these monies back to the communities through loans, financing car dealerships, financing mortgages, financing retail, financing everything they finance from 9 to 5, they're financing with all of our monies, and they're making monies. But when I say all of our monies, the white man's money, the black man's money, everybody who put monies into that white bank, but that white bank is only distributing monies back into the white communities, and they put nothing back into the black ones, the monies that all of our monies is making. So we have to be able to put our monies into our own financial institutions in order to have our own cash flow. And this is something that we're going to be introducing and talking about in the near future. We're finding these black banks. We're still doing our research, but we're going to be able to present as many of these black banks to our communities as we possibly can. You will hear from them, but brothers and sisters, that we don't have the banks, we must create the banks. But it's so important, the trillions of dollars that we're putting into white financial institutions, we got to put them into our own institution. We got to keep our cash flow in our own black communities. So again, I go back to our topic as to why so many African-American males and females and homes are broken up and marriages are at its all-time lows in our communities. I say, and all the problems that poverty is presenting in our communities, I say it's economics. Again, that's my opinion. So with my opinion now, I'm going to go over to my co-host. Then we're going to open our mics up to all of those who are listening, and we all going to share in on this opinion as we go in for the evening. So, Brother Aziz, I am going to now hear your opinion as the co-host of the show, and then our other co-host, Sister Aisha. Brother Aziz.
Well, thank you very much, and I believe the topic what we were talking about, unmarried black women, why so many of them are. And I agree, it has to do with economics, solely, primarily economics, and that's the ability to be able to take care of the family. And you know, this welfare system was created supposedly to help families out and all that, but in the process of doing that, they didn't want no men around nowhere, especially in the black communities in that. So the black men couldn't come around still, even though their family was getting some extra support. And it's part of the system that we live in, this capitalistic system. It's designed to eventually, as it has grown, as the country has grown, it's grown to the point wherein years ago when one man could go out and possibly take care of the family because we wasn't living in such a materialistic type society then wherein we had everything pulling at us. You know, you need this, you need to buy that, you need to buy that. As well as items that we needed wasn't as expensive as they are today. So as we start growing, everything got more and more expensive. You know, the brothers couldn't afford to take care of the sisters, even though sisters were, you know, having children and that without men there, you know, in the household. And it just grew on and on until welfare became a crutch, in a sense, for some of our communities because it took away their desire to go out and really do for self. It was almost like the master is taking care of us and that. And we know for a fact, this is just not a theory, it's a fact that children, men and women, form a better, they're better human beings when they are as a family, one as a family, as well as when they have some form of spiritual guidance in their life. Whatever that spiritual guidance or denomination of their belief in a higher power may be, but that type of guidance is what constitutes the behavior and what a family is all about. So when we're missing that, that's what's causing us to have high crime rates, especially among our youth. I was watching the evening news today, and in Washington, D.C., a lady maybe a few months ago was attacked by a young black teenager, and she was hit in the head, in the back of the head with a brick. And she survived, and everything was on film and everything, and the teenager got caught. Well, it comes up that after the lady went through her therapy and all that, and the teenager had been going through, went to juvenile discipline, the lady said she wanted to meet the kid. She forgave the kid for what he had done, and she said the kid apologized to her, and he was very serious about it and was getting enrolled into a vocational school, taking up some kind of craft. She didn't mention what it was. She said, but the kid was very serious about his apology and his outlook on life after this happened and that. And she forgave the youth for doing that because she said, the reason why I wanted to talk with him was asking, why did he do it? The child didn't really know why he did it. It was just, and she didn't really say what the answer was either specifically. But it was that there were so many problems around, so much hatred and not enough love, and when I say love, not enough paying attention to me, giving me some guidance, showing me some love, showing that, that somebody cares about me. And you say that's a lot of what's going on with a lot of black youth, but it's still, they're coming from places where there's not a lot of money in the family, so they wasn't raised with their dad, and they were struggling and that. And the sisters, truly and truly, all brothers that had a mother that was raised by their mother, we have to say, man, we got to, you know, we owe our life to them. They really raised us, took care of us, they endured some hard times, and they put up with a lot. Because a lot of us are not patient enough to put up with our mothers, put up with coming from disobedient children, or children that just wouldn't do what the parents asked them to do. So I think, you know, that's one of the reasons why a lot of our our youth get in trouble, well, the main reason why about 64% of our black women are not married because the men are not there. You know, the men don't have the jobs to take care of the women. And, you know, when you don't have the job to take care of the family, sometimes brothers just don't try to do what they got. They just said, I ain't going to be able to do it anyway. And they just kind of vanish. And then some of them still will let it be known, but they're just not contributing. So it's a number of reasons why our sisters aren't actually married today. But I do believe it's very important to realize it's the capitalistic system that we're in. The brothers just don't have the job to keep up with the cost of living increases that are steady put upon us in the society. That's why the cost of living raises that we get could never keep up with the cost of living itself. You know, and there's no control on nothing, whatever it may be, from the medicine you take to the water you drink to everything. There's no control on what the cost should be. It just escalates higher and higher and higher, and it makes it difficult for people to exist as a family, not an individual, but exist as a family. We see a lot of the Latinos or Spanish people or Spanish-speaking people, we see a lot of them living together. And that's a good thing. Some people want to talk about it in a negative way. But it's a good thing because you have a family core there. You have people working together to try to make it where everybody can have something. Everybody can have a peace of mind, live in some sort of good, comfortable home or live in a home and not be struggling. When one of the logo for the New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street Business Association, the brother Bynum initially brought up with the program is what one can't do, many can. And that's the same way with the family. What one can't do, the family can. And it's so important to be part of a family. When you're living with a family and you have family participation, not just your individual family, husband, wife, children, sons and daughters, daughters and sons, but it's also brothers and sisters that have families also, that has husbands and wives, and they have children. And their children may have children. That family, an extended family, is such a beautiful thing in our community. And that's what helps promote and constitute our young ladies wanting to have good husbands and start planning, as Brother Bilal said earlier, and start looking at the good things about how you get married, looking at planning ahead of time, planning, not just jumping into it because somebody got pregnant, and in order to keep a good name and do the right thing, we're going to jump and get married. And that happened to so many of us. So we get into that, and we find out we do love this sister and all of that, and we try to make a go at it, and sometimes it's successful, and it lasts for many, many years, and sometimes it doesn't, but yet and still, we don't plan like we should. I know some that plan like they should. I'm not going to mention any names, but I have a godson, and him and his wife, they really plan well, and they did well, and they're doing well today. And Brother Bilal knows the same way. He's had sons. They're playing what they were doing, and they're doing well today. And, you know, inshallah, God willing, they'll keep going on planning like that. But these are individuals that planned on what they were doing, and they followed it through. But we're just talking about a few individuals. But we want to reach out there to the many, and that's the reason why we have this topic tonight about so many of our sisters being unmarried when, if they did have a husband, well, it would make a greater difference. It would strengthen our community. It would strengthen them and the family. And it would be a better place for our youth to start growing and learn about how to become productive citizens in the community. Give them an opportunity to relax from the pace for the craziness goes outside of their homes and that, and maybe be able to focus on something they'd like to do in the future, something they'd like to be, you know, from being in that environment where they was having some encouragement that you could be whatever you want to be. It's a matter of you adjusting yourself and disciplining yourself to do that. And, our churches and our masjids and the temples and synagogues where a lot of our people go, this is something that should be constantly taught to our youth, especially our teenagers, about planning for a marriage counseling, sex before marriage, what it causes if you have a child, the whole turnover, the uproar, the upsetting of one's life when this happens, how it affects both families on both sides. And most of the time when teenagers have children, they're not able to take care of that. That burden is on the children's family, those teenagers' families on both sides, the girls' families and the boys' families. Well, it's supposed to be for those that care, you know. They're, it's not a burden, but they put a responsibility on their parents that wasn't there before. So all of this here comes along with the planning, as Brother Vallal had said earlier, mentioning planning for these type things and not just going out there randomly getting pregnant. Now we got a family, no plans and nothing, and nothing like that. And it all leads up to one of the things that helps along with the family is, of course, what our show is about. And then what this month is about in particular. This month in particular is Women's Month. Women's Month. Women's History Month in America. Women's Month. And what is this doing is showing us the different things that women have done in America to help build this country, as well as telling us about different businesses that exist now that are helping empower women in different areas, in the food industry, in restaurants, and as well as open up personal businesses, as well as other professional women in the legal, the medical, administrative, and they've been highlighting these different women all week, and they'll be doing it all month long, as well as for us African-American men and women, women and men. This month means highlighting a lot of African-American sisters who have done so much, not only to keep our African-American community together, but as well as helping America grow. There are many African-American sisters, some of these, and I have to get my language right, but I don't want to say something negative, that a lot of our African-American sisters who have been housekeepers and maids at a lot of these Caucasian white people's houses have actually been nannies to these babies. These jokers that sit up and suck these women's breasts for milk, got milk out. This is not something that's unusual. It happens many times, happened in the past greatly, especially in the so-called baby boomer generation and before then. So we know our sisters, Women's History Month, and that is a small token to what we as African Americans should say and owe to our sisters and showing gratitude to them for what they've done. So one of the things, again, that we will try to help as much as we can and show the need for, and that is for our sisters to be married to black And if they're married to black men, black men that know what a man is about, they know what they have to do and the responsibilities as a husband should be. So that's my opening, Brother Bilal, for the moment. And I appreciate you letting me say that much. And I want to let someone else, our other director, Sister Aisha, if she's with us, to come on and bring to you, Sister Aisha. As-salamu
alaykum. As-salam. Thank you, Brother Aziz and Brother Bilal. This evening, hopefully we have two very distinguished ladies online with us. And we would like to, I want to introduce them and ask for their comments, because this is a topic that I'm sure that they have a lot of experience with. So our first guest is Dr. Beverly Anon, Doctorate of Psychology. Beverly, are you on? Beverly, are you on? Okay. While we're waiting for Beverly, our other guest is Gwen Bookman, who is a professor at one of the historical HBCUs, Bennett College in Greensboro. And Gwen worked with these young people, these women, and she certainly can bring to us the temperament of some of the women, their thinking, that we might be overlooking. So, Gwen, are you on board? Hello, Gwen. I don't know. We can't hear them. Well, so until they come on board, I would like to certainly mention that this is an extremely important topic, and I would entire Gwen and Beverly, if you come on while I'm talking, please interrupt me and let me know that you're here. Many of the issues that we have to discuss within our community is this situation with black women having to raise families without the black male. And we have to also discuss some strategies that we can implement as a larger, broader community to alleviate some of this pain and suffering that is taking place in our community. We recognize the problem, we do research on it, and we understand it. But we have to come up with some solutions. And this is what we want to do on this station. We want to bring people on to discuss it with us. And many of these people are already working on solutions that they can share with our audience. So when...
And when your guests come on, we ask them to just interject and come right on in, because we certainly want to hear from our guests. And like you said, let's see, they may be here already before I start talking. If so, sisters, we look forward to your comments.
Okay.
What I wanted to say was, I was speaking earlier about affordability and putting together a portfolio as to where you would put together a financial portfolio and make certain that your mode of living is in order and what have you. Give you an example of what I guess of what I'm trying to say. You look at these professors.
Yes, hello? Is that Beverly or Gwen?
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Beverly.
Oh, Lord, girl, how you doing? Who is this? Who?
You are. This is Aisha. You are on the Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, I'm here.
Okay, is this Beverly?
It's Gwen.
Oh, Gwen. Welcome, Gwen. And I introduce you. This is Gwen Bookman. And Gwen, as I said earlier, she's a professor at one of the historical HBCUs, which is Bennett College in Greensboro. And Gwen, we know that we know that you work closely with the young women all the time, and you have been doing this for years. And our topic of concern is the high divorce rate amongst African-American women who are raising children, especially without the presence of a male, and how this issue is impacting the greater good of our society, our African-American communities. And we would like for you to just jump right in, make your comments, ask any questions of us. You might have heard Brother Bilal and Brother Aziz in their opening statement, but this is the topic that we're talking about tonight, so please feel free to share your comments and observations.
And Sister Aisha, if you don't mind, I'd like to just give a good doctor a scenario of what, like I said, she may have heard us, but of course I will reiterate. Sister, we were saying that one of the reasons why we think that there is such a large divorce rate between males and African-American males and African-American females, we think it's economics. And I was given a scenario as to where black men, first and foremost, need to have the affordability of marriage. And I leave that up to the black man because it's his responsibility to take on the obligation of marriage, even though his wife may support him because she may work. But the obligation of marriage and being able to take on a wife, I should be able to afford a wife. Now, and so hypothetically, and I was asking just you, Sister Aisha, as an example of what I am talking about when it comes to African-American males. And, of course, I can't give you an example on those who are low income are having problems with affordability, but I look at the African Americans, especially the professional sports African Americans. Those are the African Americans that you will find within some of the higher income as far as black men are concerned. And if you look at these African Americans, even though most of them are not married to black women, they still have families. And you see how loyal they are when it comes to the affordability of their families, whether, of course, it may not be African-American, a wife, but his obligations and his loyalty because he can afford his family. And that's the same type of loyalty and same type of obligation I am saying would be for most African-American males if their cash flow, and I say cash flow, or I guess I would say cash income, was as to where they could afford to take care of their families. So with that said, now I am going to turn it over to you ladies who would be much more astute to what our subject is all about. Thanks so much and welcome to the show.
Okay, Gwen, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes,
okay. So did you hear the comments from Brother Bilal?
I did.
And any comment that you would like to make on this topic, it will be very appreciated. And we know that you have an insight because you are dealing with young African-American professional women every day on the campus and in the community, and you have been doing this for years. So please do share your insight with us. So go right ahead.
You know, I tell you, one of the things that I am very concerned about is the preparation of our younger generation. Things are very different, I believe, in terms of the striving that we were embedded with when we were coming out of high school. It's a puzzle to me. And I'm not exactly sure, you know, what to say about it, other than it concerns me. Part of why I love my job at Bennett is that I can serve as a role model for the young women and to give them some perspective from the standpoint of someone who sat where they sat over 50 years ago. But the drive is different, the determination is different, the recognition that you have to be better and more in order to be competitive out there in the world, all of that is gone. And it gives me pause every day in terms of how these young women are going to go into the world and be successful. As I wish for all of them. That's my preliminary statement.
Well, Gwen, let me ask you. I too have recognized a difference in the whole character and the social position of our young women. How do you think, what do we need to do as a generation older than they are, how can we impact some of the better attributes from our lifestyle or from our experiences to help them as they try to figure this whole thing out, this whole situation out? And do you think that these young people, do you think these young people will be able to move into situations where they will get married? Are they even thinking about that?
You know, that's a wonderful comment, especially in terms of the solution. I think probably many of the folk in academia now are finding very much a different focus as I exhibited in what I talked about. I think it's a product of the time. I don't think it's necessarily these young women at an HBCU. I believe it's a product of the time. And one of the reasons that I enjoy my work, one of the reasons I get up every day and go to work, is the fact that my solution is to be an example and a role model for any of the ones who are open to hear it and be a part of it. But I have them. I have very, very tough conversations with them. I know sometimes it's not good for them to hear what I have to say, but I say it anyway because, once again, the path they're on is the path I've already trod. And if I don't do my best to make it a little bit easier for them, I don't think I will have done the job that I was empowered to do here.
Sister Gwen, may I ask you a question?
Sure.
Bilal Bynum. Like you said, and the example that you do set, you find that to be, and I can just about visualize that example because I think you can show independence and you can show professionalism. But from your being around these, and I would say the females in this case, what do you see as far as marriages and families with these females that you have an association or you're able to lecture or teach?
Yeah, that's a fascinating comment as well. You know, I tell you, in today's world, with there being so many, I don't know, I can't think of another word to use except options for these women, there is very little conversation, at least in my perspective. There's very little conversation about those kinds of choices. We speak a lot with them about work. We think a lot about where you go in professional school. But I don't know if I've ever, ever really heard a conversation with any of these young women about that aspect of relationship, marriage, after they graduate. I had to chuckle to myself when you said it, because the other thing that I think is new and different for them than it was back in the days that I was graduating, when you say married, are you referring about heterosexual couples? Are you referring to couples who also are same sex? And that is a very different engagement for them than it is for heterosexual couples. What were your thoughts about the concept of marriage?
Of course, my concept, I have to see it as a male and female because I'm looking at the growth of families when I think in terms of marriage also. But, of course, as far as our way of living today, I can't, other than the male and female, it, like you said, it becomes confusing to me. At that point also. So I didn't, I guess I'm a male and female concept.
Okay. All good.
So, Gwen, I have a question. Are you saying that young people are not even having conversations about marriage? And if they do, if they are, is it about various heterosexual relationships? Are you saying that?
Yeah. I think this is a fascinating conversation. I guess what I can, the only thing I can do is talk about my own experience with young people these days, and especially these young women that I teach. And all I can say to you is that conversation that we had so freely years ago in my generation about marriage and having a family, I really don't think those conversations are taking place at that same rate anymore. And it was wonderful, fascinating, and also a little bit, I must confess, troubling when the conversation started. Because I know for a fact, whenever I'm in the classroom setting and I'm talking about concepts such as marriage or anything else that one might normally think about in the heterogeneous sex concept, I'm very thoughtful about not doing that. I would never make a comment in my class about marriage within the traditional concept that we think about. I really don't know what the circumstance is here in North Carolina, but I would never talk about it. And perhaps, you know, it's my own issue and not necessarily an issue within the classroom and the conversation that I have the option to engage with them on. But I'm just being very candid in the sense that I would never bring it up, not in the concept of the traditional way, because I know that that's not the experience of some of these young women.
I have a question I'd like to ask Ms. Bookman. Ms. Bookman, I'm a co-host also, Abdul Shaheed, and I wanted to ask you if you had three important things that the young ladies expressed to you that are their desire. What do you think the most three important things to them that they're looking for in their future?
Yeah. You know what? That's also a fascinating concept for me, because I'm really not sure whether these young people are focused in the same way that I believe I think we were focused in our day. I think they would have some of the same desires. They want to graduate from college and have a good job. I believe they would want to graduate from college and have a good life, be able to get a job and make a good salary. It's more for me the puzzlement of the personal life. I really cannot tell you what their personal desires are for their lives. I know it professionally, college completion, graduate school for some, jobs for others, maybe even entrepreneurship. But personal, I really don't know. But and you're focusing me on something that perhaps I will approach them about. What are your personal desires in terms of marriage and children and family? I just know it's a subject that me personally, I have pretty much stayed clear of it.
Now, Ms. Mookman, I certainly understand exactly your position of staying clear. This is our third week of holding this conversation, and because it's our third week is because the public, by their popular demand and comments, look like they and the ratings that they give you your station, because so many come on to hold the conversation. You continue with the request and the demand of your audience. Myself, knowing what you're saying, what you're talking about as far as staying away, when the question came up, we looked up the statistics in the beginning, and those statistics said that, and this was 3 weeks ago, when we Valentine's Day, that's when we had this first conversation, And what's brought on that conversation, statistics said that 75% of black women in this country wasn't married, and 64% of white females in this country wasn't married. Now, interesting, when you were saying, and let me just finish up when I said I found the delicate, I knew if I continued this conversation of try to give explanations as to why heterosexuals, black men and black women, wasn't necessarily marriage and the many problems and the females, they're still talking about many problems they have with not being married. But it comes back to the United States. Before I get there, it comes back to, you know, the problems of why this can't happen, why that can't happen. But I wanted to know that the reasons why so many situations can't happen, it was seemed to be whatever the problem that was going on between a male and a female. And like I said, I knew that if we continued this conversation week after week, we were going to come and eventually get into the discussion of same-sex marriages. And I knew that wasn't a conversation for me at all. And so I was very apprehensive about continuing this broadcast because I knew eventually we would have to get into, from the male and female to the female and female, or the male and male. And like I said, I knew that was a conversation that I knew I wouldn't feel very good about holding, because number one, like I said, being a male who see a situation as man and woman, I might say something offensive to those who don't see it as male and woman. And, of course, I don't want to offend anyone, especially on my own radio show that I'm trying to continue to promote. And I know how sensitive and how political that situation is. I know what you're saying when you say it's a conversation that you may not have looked forward to getting into. My closing though is this. When it comes to the statistics of 75% black women's not married, 64% of white women, American white women's and American, and then of course you get into your situations where you have a couples where the male and the woman is marrying a woman. Anyway, we're talking about American. If you look around our entire world, our entire globe, it is still a heterosexual world. It is still a world where you're going to find a man married to a woman and a woman married to a man. You can go throughout the continent of Africa and Asia and many other continents, the Arabian continents, and you're going to see where the rest of the world is still a man and a woman. But here in the United States, we have these flexible situations, look like it goes on here, but it's nowhere else in the world. So, again, why do you think that is the situation, madam?
So, Gwen, are you still there? I don't know if she dropped off or what.
No, I don't have anyone who has dropped off yet. She may be on mute. But no, I am. No one has dropped off yet. I don't know. I don't know how to keep my maybes going, but I hope I haven't. Because I know this is a conversation that I'm very sensitive about having. But anyway, I'm sort of curious about why you would see these statistics, and it's only look like in America.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can't speak for Gwen, and I know that she does have experience in this area because she's working with these young women all the time. But perhaps one of the things that she did say was a concern for the women. And when we did some more research, we came up with about 7 or 8 major concerns. One was financial stability, and I think she alluded to that. Another one was career opportunity, and, of course, she alluded to that as a major concern. There were other concerns such as infidelity, and we often hear young women talking about not trusting, the young men, but they don't talk about it in too many panel discussions, I understand, but they are very concerned about their security, which was another concern. Now, and decreased happiness, not falling in love. They have that as a concern, but I don't think I have ever heard that topic being discussed. So if any of you all have heard our young people discussing decreased happiness, not falling in love, please let me know.
When you say not falling in love, how do you control? I mean, I can see situations, romance, but falling in love, that's real delicate. I find that to be.
Well, it is.
I don't know if someone can control love. And whether I'm falling in love or whether I am in love or whether, because I think many of us could go through life and maybe never realize what it is to be in love, especially if you've got enough frustrations in your life.
Yeah. Well, another concern that they had was exploiting sexual attributes. That's the body. A lot of attention is given to that. In the environment that they live in, and they are very concerned about that, and we see that because they are constantly remaking themselves almost on a monthly basis, reinventing themselves, their appearance. They are very concerned about disloyalty in interpersonal relationships, and they also mention the lack of men education. Many of them in this survey did not feel that the African-American man's level of education measured up to their expectations. So perhaps those are some of the concerns that Gwen, the students at Bennett, that Gwen communicates with on a regular basis, encounter.
And I believe it. I have granddaughters. I have a couple granddaughters. One, of course, she's graduated from college. She's an RN now. And then I have another granddaughter. She's about to graduate this year, but both of them, I know I've gotten into a general conversations with them. And when it comes to males, it's like they can't find a male that can be up to their expectations. Not that they don't, I don't think they look, but it's like they just almost feel like they just cannot find a male up to their expectations, and the stupidity that you see a lot of males doing just makes things worse. And I can see how an intelligent person, and our females are much more intelligent than our males, I can see how that would be a problem. But the thing about it is, how in the world do we ever close the gap?
Well, one of the ways is a lot of these young'uns, they don't trust one another. That's one of the, it's not a matter a lot of times of finance. A lot of the educated professional women, and I've talked to a few of them, they just want a man that they can trust. They know sometimes men are intimidated with the salaries or the, their educational level and that, but you find a lot of brothers that don't mind that, but the sisters are tired of getting sometimes used, misused, or used or abused financially, and they don't trust a lot of brothers. And as a young'un, a lot of these young ladies, they know, you know, guys will say, I like you, but I don't love you, you know. And I think that's a big difference in the definition of love that a lot of these young adults don't realize. It is a big difference between liking and loving. So
that's
my take on that.
Yeah, disloyalty was one of the concerns, one of the major concerns. So, Glenn or Beverly, if you're still with us, we appreciate your comments.
Yeah.
This is a fascinating discussion to me, and one that maybe has triggered me to do something that I haven't done before with the population that I work with, is to talk to them about their personal aspirations. We spend a lot of time in academia talking about preparing them for the world of work after college, the world of advanced education after college. I have never had a conversation with my students about their personal aspirations for themselves after college. And so I think, being sparked by the conversation with you tonight, that I'll do that. I will open up that conversation with them. I will tell you, however, that most of us perhaps steer away from it because of the options that are available for young people these days, in terms of not necessarily following a pattern that I think was probably more clearly expected for us. As a young woman graduating from college, I can't even envision anyone talking to me about anything other than marriage to a man and having a family with children in a traditional sense. And that's not, I think, what shall I say? That's not, I don't think, an assumption that you can make about where young women are going these days. And I think because many of us prefer not to venture into those unknown waters, we deal with them about things that don't deal with their personal lives. And so
absolutely.
I really appreciate having this conversation, because it may permit me to deal with them a little bit more in depth than I would have under ordinary circumstances.
Well, you know, possibly, Gwen, and I think that's an excellent observation, and possibly if you, as the person who is in front of them and have the contact with them, had not felt comfortable perhaps going into a personal conversation about their lives, I can also imagine that in the larger society, probably the only time they have that conversation is with a very close one-on-one friend.
Yeah.
And perhaps they are totally void in expressing their inner feelings about relationships and where they want to go in the future. In our generation, it was very common to have that kind of conversation.
Yeah.
With in the education system and in our, of course, our neighborhoods, our families. But that was a conversation that young girls couldn't wait to have.
I talk with people a lot about the difference that we are confronting today, especially within that male-female or female-female or male-male a relationship option. I am with people a lot of times who are puzzled by it, especially within the context of it used not to be that way. I am one of those people who, I guess the word might be accepting of the reality of where people are these days. A lot of people find it intolerable that something has happened that has opened up options that we in the older generations, I'm 70 some odd years old, that we didn't confront. And the puzzlement for me is it that we didn't confront it because it wasn't an issue, or did we not confront it because it was not an accepted issue? And I'm still grappling with that. I don't know anything about those of you who are on the line and in this conversation. I have no idea what your perspectives are about that. But what one can say, it wasn't an issue in our day. But I probably, if I were to honestly express my view about it, I would probably say it's not that it wasn't an issue. It wasn't an issue that was permitted to be discussed.
Yes. Well, Sister Aisha, what I am we're well under your time. We know it's the show has turned over. It's your show now because it's past 8 o'clock. My show ended at 8, but as you can see, this conversation, like it's been for the last 3 weeks, carries over into your time. I would like to, before I turn it over to you completely, Sister Aisha, go to our lines and say our lines are open. Anyone who has been able to hear our conversation thus far can now join in. So our lines are open. Any comments anyone out there would like to make, and especially to our guests, we welcome your comments. Our lines are open.
Thank you, Brother Bilal. And I'm excited to, Gwen, you say that you're going to feel your way with your young ladies and see if you can have that interpersonal conversation. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I think I feel almost compelled to, because
it's something
that they need to talk about.
Yeah. And we certainly would like to, in the future, hear how you deal with that and what their comments and what were they apprehensive or were they afraid to. It would be interested in knowing that. And I think that since you are there at the all-girls school college, that will be a good platform to get that information from. So please definitely share it with us. We will look forward to it.
And Sister, if you don't mind, we would certainly, Sister, like to, and of course, with us, Sister Aisha, if she don't mind, we would love to have your students, if you could bring them right on the station, because by coming on the station, now they will have the, they can share their opinions, but they can the opinion from many others, from many other patients. And Sister Aisha, you can let the sister know where our audience, where our audience is coming from, Sister Aisha.
Gwen, and hopefully if Beverly comes on. Our audience, of course, the largest part of our audience is in the U.S., without a doubt, but we also have an audience in Zimbabwe, Canada, Russia, France, Tanzania, India, Kenya, Mozambique, South Africa, Ghana, Tunisia, Portugal, the U.K., and Ireland. And we often comment about our audience. I think for many of them, they are listening to see what is the temperament and what is the tone of the different subject matters that we discuss, how the Americans are viewing things. And these are many issues that some of them are facing in their own country, and they might not have answers for, but listening in every Wednesday night, we have different topics, and we are certainly exploring the pulse of America, I do feel, on this broadcast. So I think that's a great suggestion that Brother Bilal just made, Gwen, if you can get them, if they are willing to come on, talk about this issue. And let us know how they deeply feel. Let them know that we have a lot to learn from them.
And we're certainly
will be excited, and they will be certainly welcome to share their feelings with us. And not only just on this topic, we must start engaging our young people, because they do not come on platforms like this. We have to start engaging them and make them a part of what we do. They can make comments to us that maybe we need to change something, maybe we need to get rid of something, add something else. But we need their comment, and we welcome their input. So, If you're okay with this, bring them on. Let us know.
And
of course, we want you back.
I definitely will talk with them about it. I'll come back and report my own perspective, and I will invite them to come and join in the conversation. This is my first time being part of your broadcast. And so I would be very fascinated to know, over the course of your being in existence, what some of the issues are that you have discussed and the ways in which you are engaging with young people or interested in engaging with young people about their views. What are some of the other areas that you all are interested in?
We would invite Aisha continue to go to our archives.
Mm-hmm.
Go to our archives, you're going to have 10 years of our broadcasting subjects that we have broadcast. I would say that you would probably be on our listening to our show for about maybe close to 6 months or so before you go through those archives. But we invite you to go.
Okay.
And
we'll direct you.
Okay. Well, that's fascinating.
There are other topics that we must start talking about because we are dealing with a new generation of young people, and they have serious concerns. And my concern with our younger population is that they are keeping all of these feelings inside, and they are afraid of criticism, or they're afraid to bring them out. And so they just keep them quietly within their little grouping. But we want them to find a place here at this blog talk radio channel.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we don't have our young people, we're not going to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know? So we welcome your comments. And, you know, we talk about disaster preparedness. And
mm-hmm.
we need to get our young people interested in disaster preparedness. Because I was speaking with some people in local government a few days ago. And we were talking about protecting sustainable infrastructure in local government and what will happen to the infrastructure of the local government when a storm occurs. We're in Region 4 in North Carolina, and this region is known as Tornado Alley. And it's not a matter of if we have a natural disaster. It's a question of when it's going to happen. And so we don't want our infrastructure in local government to fail. The infrastructure, all of those services that the government provides to the citizens, to the community people, to the people. The only reason the government is in existence is to serve the needs of the people. That's the infrastructure. So we want our young people to become more involved with this issue of natural disaster because this is the new lifestyle that we have to embrace. And we're not embracing it very well. I'm not talking about an African-American situation so much as I'm talking about a whole community situation.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like for Bennett young people to get involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
Because they come from all over the U.S. and mm-hmm. many of them from out of the country. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I think this concept of helping young people connect their own individual situations to the bigger situation of others, whether that's their community, their state, the country here in the U.S. or globally, that's another real important issue, I think, for getting them to be aware of. We're so interdependent now, and there's so many ways in which what we do in our own little sphere impacts what's happening across the globe. And so I really like the idea that you are talking about in terms of helping them to understand what their impact can be, not just here. I think that's important. But I think it's also important for them to understand the impact of what they do here in terms of what happens in other parts of the world. Bennett is one of those places that really tries to get students to understand their connectedness to the bigger whole. So I really, really enjoy where you're going with this and how we, as the older generation, can serve as, I guess the best word to use is role models for helping these young people think about how they're going out, you know, into the world and what the impact is that they can make, not only in their personal lives. I think that's extremely important. And I really do appreciate you all basically opening my eyes to a way that maybe I can engage with the students that I am with that I haven't really thought about before. But I think this context of connecting them to things like you're talking about, Aisha, the natural disasters and being prepared and also thinking beyond your own little world to how other people are being impacted by what you do or what you don't do is so critical. So I definitely will try to get some of my students engaged enough to maybe come on at one of your later broadcasts to share directly with you what they're thinking about, what's confronting them. It's perplexing to me. It really is perplexing because I can tell you for a fact that the mindset of the young people, at least from where I sit, is extremely different than the mindset I felt I had when I was traveling where they are now. And having conversations with them and at least getting a dialogue going about where they are, what they're thinking, what their aspirations are, and how they think they are going to be able to impact the world. I think those are such important conversations to have with them. And I think it's what invigorates me. I mean, long time ago, I should have already stopped plowing in these fields. I should be, at least in some people's perspectives, I should be at home rocking in my chair. But it's important to me. It's important to me particularly as an African-American woman to serve as a role model with these young women because while I hate to frame it as that, we've got a lot of lost young people out there. And I cannot for the life of me figure out what has happened. I mean, I have conversations on a daily basis about what my world was like well over 50 years ago when I left college and started my life as an adult and looking at them and thinking about them leaving college and going out and starting their world. It's a different dynamic, and their mindset is totally different. And it concerns me. I really can't put my fingers on it. And I guess the only thing that we can do as the older generation is try, like we're talking about now, engaging them in conversation, hearing where they are coming from and trying to serve as a role model for them in getting from where they are to where they want to be. It's perilous.
I'm thinking, Gwen, as you talk, we might be out of touch with them, our generation. We might be out of touch with them. Because we don't know them. Of course, they don't know us, but if they are not as involved in the broader society, and we know that they have to be, perhaps our generation has lost touch with them.
Yeah.
So
I think it's really worth us examining. Where are the missing pieces? Now, I must tell you one thing that almost concerns me on a daily basis. Part of that is the changing atmosphere of 2024. And I spend a lot of time mainly in my own head, but I do also engage with some others about it. And that's the difference in the world that these young people are leaving college, going into, and the world that we left. And like I said before, I have no shame in saying I'm 77 years old. I graduated over 50 years ago, and Lord knows the world in which I entered my professional life, my adult life, is very, very different than the adult life in which these young women are going. And so there are two things that concern me. One is the world itself into which they're going, and the other is the preparedness in which they're entering that world. And I'm not ashamed to say, I really do not believe that the majority of the young people going out into the world in 2024 are as prepared as we were to face the world that they're going into. And I almost said hostile. Our world was a definitely hostile world. When I graduated from college, Durham, North Carolina had not yet integrated their schools.
Yep.
So I went out from my secondary education into my college world confronting either, which I did, going to an HBCU or integrating a college. Because at that time, that's what you were faced with. This go round in 2024, these students are not confronting that. They're not confronting having to integrate, on some level, most of the spaces into which they're going. But what does that mean for them in terms of how they have to enter those spaces? I'm really telling you all seriously. I don't see them being as committed for the level of excellence that I believe we knew we had to have when we entered those spaces.
Absolutely.
I'm puzzled by it. I'm fascinated by it.
And I think you have a great point. Yes.
You still have an audience that you may want to go back to and see if they would like to share in on their comments. Like I like to let everyone know that if you can hear us, our mics are open so we can hear you. And we invite you to, even if you have to interject, we don't mind a little interjections every now and then, but our conversation and our mics are open. We don't have the answers to all of our questions, but as a community, we may just come pretty close. So our mics are open, and we welcome your comments.
Yes. Part of the reasoning behind the mentality of young people today is due to the changing in the thought processes in America. When America went through various different phases, civil rights, slavery, etc., there was a total different type of thinking. Today you will notice that the thinking, if you look at the commercials on TV and you look at what's going on now, there's a group of people out there trying to wipe away cultural knowledge and cultural backgrounds. The majority of the people are getting recognition now, half white, half black, and they are not looking back at or onto the richness of the cultural history from which we come. So by erasing the history, if you don't know, and Malcolm said it good, if you don't know where you came from, how will you know where you're going? It's impossible to know. And the mentality that is out there now, you're not going to be able to define it in the scope of common sense knowledge. They're different. We've got so many diseases, mental diseases, that are not being addressed. And the old ghost of the plantation still hangs around. We still have racism and prejudice and hatred that still hangs around. When people that went to HBCUs and in the sisters' age category that just got through speaking, they were motivated by the desire to learn and rebuild and take part in the world and make the world a better place. They were motivated by, a sister's age, going to college, going to HBCU back then. She was driven. She was driven, whether she recognized it or not, to do great, to go further than her parents, to go further than the adults of that particular time. Children today, youngsters today, don't care. They are doped and drugged out. But we got to go to take it to them to the streets and re-educate them.
Mm-hmm.
Chancellor, yes.
I'd like to say one thing on that there, if I might. I want to say
go right ahead. Who is that?
Yeah, I wanted to say something about the integration. Integration not as we see it, but integration of four generations. And what I'm talking about, integrations of two different mindsets. That is what happened when integration came in. Our children went into another mindset. They had to integrate into a mindset that bagged them, took them away from the culture that they were raised up in. The things that they were taboo to them now was no longer taboo because the new mindset said, hey, that was okay. So what we're talking about is integration of mindset. That is the troubling part. That's when we say integration, that's really what it wasn't going to school with somebody else learning book knowledge. It was integration of mindset, moral and ethics and
cultural
spirituality.
Science.
Nice.
Yes.
Well, we have about 10 more minutes, and the brother that was speaking, you were getting ready to make another point, I think. If so, please make your point. We have just about 10 minutes left. And,
I was going to ask the brother first, though, we'd like for you, if you could, to identify yourself, but the question is, when it comes to our subject, and I don't know if you picked up the subject, but our subject is that statistics are showing that 75% of our black women, and of course 64% of our Caucasian American women, are not married. And so again, All of the opinions that we've been sharing this evening, all of them are quite valid. All of us, like I said, are right. Everything that everyone is saying, we all can learn from it. Brother,
yeah.
I just want to ask you, from your comments, how do you see marriages going forward? How do you see marriages and families growing in our communities again or whenever it just may happen? Because, I mean, it's 70-something.
I got your point, yeah. I understand
understand where you're coming from. Let me say something right quick. I'm sitting in the middle of the cradle of racism right now. I'm in Birmingham, Alabama, and passing through. But my name is Suleiman Akbar. That's my brother, Abdulaziz Shaheed. We're brothers twice. We're brothers Muslim, and we come out of the same womb. And, of course, you, Bilal, you're my brother as well. But the point, in reference to the point that you was making, I was shifting the mindset towards looking at the mindset. Divorce today is there's coming a point in this society where there's not going to be any marriage, where there's not going to be commitment. They have already integrated in same-sex marriage, and it's acceptable to accept it, and it's unfashionable not to accept it, and you will be ostracized. We know this from D.C. We know this from the D.C. area. And what it does, it destroys the family unit, it destroys the individual identity, and it destroys the cultural identity, and it destroys the spiritual identity. So people are lost. People are lost, and they need to, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, is return to God, return to Allah. And by returning to God, and I believe God is the one who created us, and who best understands the thing than the one who created it.
Thank you for those comments. Yes. All right, ahead. We have a few minutes left. Brother Bilal?
No, I was turning it back to you.
Okay. Well, thank you both. Brother, we would really like for you to come back, share your thoughts, because we need to hear those voices that we don't hear all the time. We
yes,
need
ma'am.
A new perspective. We want to be able to identify with our young people. Gwen,
yeah.
We certainly want you to work with your young people and come back. Tell us about your progress. Invite them to come on the show. And
yes, ma'am.
Brother, as you travel around, you know young people. We need to hear their voices. And perhaps this can be a platform where they will feel comfortable speaking out.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
Because,
yes, ma'am.
Because there is not any large public platform that I hear young people speaking on, and perhaps you all might, but I don't hear it. And this is a large platform that their voice can be heard and will be appreciated.
Yeah.
So please do invite them, and you all come back and help us to continue this program for another 7-8 years and into the future. When we're gone, we need them to pick it up and keep going. Because the rest of their many countries who are listening to us, for whatever their reasons might be, but I am sure that some of those reasons, I feel sure that some of those reasons is that they want to hear the temperament of America, because America is a world leader. And so they can better judge their own environment. So,
yes, ma'am.
Anyone with any closing comments before we have to go, please.
Yes,
go right
one
ahead.
Quick, one very quick comment, and that comment is that in looking at this mindset and in looking at divorce, also one of the enemies of marriage and the firmness of the foundation of family is gangs, Crips, the Bloods, gangs. So at a later date, I'd like to come back and address that.
Okay.
Well, Brother Aziz has your contact information, right?
Yes.
Okay. And he'll keep up with you when we can get to a topic like that. We do have topics coming up with the black banks. The presidents of these banks are coming on the show to talk about economic development in our community and the status and position of the black bank. It's important that we as African Americans to hear them, and we have already extended an invitation to them, and many of them have agreed to come on. They want our business back again. But also, once we give them our business back, we want to know how they are going to assist the community. So it's a two-way street here. But I am looking forward to opening an account in the Black Bank. I pulled from the Black Bank many, many years ago. Now I'm inspired to open an account. And I hope we can get our young people to do the same thing. You know, many of them don't even know that we have Black Bank. So are there any other comments before we leave? Brother Bilal, Brother Aziz, Gwen, and the brother who was speaking. And some there are other people who are online, but they're silent. Please do, if you have a comment, come forth in the next few minutes.
Well, first of all, thank you, Isha, for inviting me to come. I have not really been familiar with your program, and probably what I would like to do, maybe between now and the next time you are on, get a little bit
next Wednesday
in your history, what you're doing, why you're doing it, so that I can come back and be more participatory in what you're doing. This has been a wonderful opportunity to share with people who I really think are interested in moving, moving us forward.
Yeah.
There's so many things to do, so many ways that we can collaboratively get our folk moving in the right direction. And as a person who has been in academia for most of my professional career, I think it is so important for us to create these collaborations between the young people and ourselves. I don't want to be negative, and I don't want to put a damper on the idea that we've got young people coming behind us, but I work on a daily basis in an environment where I am concerned, and I also live in an environment where I see these young people right here at NCC. I am in the community where NCC is located, and I see young people going about their lives in a way that concerns me. And I really do think that maybe through conversations like the ones that you all are setting up, we can begin to share. And I thank you, Aisha, for putting the onus on us, not to say that they are out of step always. Sometimes we may need to turn the spotlight on ourselves, but I think it's through the conversation that we are going to all be able to move forward together.
And Gwen, I would like to say to you, bring some of the people from the academic community on board with you. Let them join this discussion. You have tremendous outreach in different areas. So please, feel free to bring them on board. We're here every Wednesday night from 7 to 9. You have the call in number. Please share it. We would love to have their comments and for them to join our network. Okay.
Thank you for the invitation, brother.
You're more than welcome. Yes, brother Bilal. Go ahead.
I'd like to tell Sister Gwen. No, Sister Gwen. Like you were saying, you're the same age as most of. And you're sharing your professional experience. And that's what we do. That's what we've been doing there for the last 10 years. Of course, I am a certified financial planner, and I graduated around 1975 also. And after 40 years of working as a financial planner, yes, I want to give back what I think I have to give as a professional. And saying that to say we invite you to join us come back. We become one of us. You all, I think you just about did that tonight. So now
yeah,
we're
so.
And
yep.
A part of our continuing conversation of New Africa Black Belt Wall Street, and bring back the power of the Black Belt that Booker T. Washington and his business associates started when they created Black Belt Wall Street. So, brothers and sisters, again, until next time, next Wednesday, same time, we look forward to continuing our conversations about business and networking through our community to see how we can have a more prosperous community. Thanks.
If you had a choice of colors, which one would you choose, my brothers? If there was no day or night, which would you prefer to be right? How long have you hated your white teacher? Who told you you loved your black preacher? Do you respect your brother's woman friend? And